From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
We cannot give in to Madigan and his Chicago agenda any longer.
We pick up 9 seats next year, totally doable, 9 seats. Mike Madigan is no longer Speaker of the General Assembly in the House of Representatives.
You're up against a record holder, the longest serving House Speaker in known history, Speaker Madigan. Is he too powerful to work with? Did he win this battle against you?
You know, Brett, when I first got to know the Speaker 9 years ago, he told me, I asked him, what's your goal for improving the quality of life for the people of Illinois? He laughed. He said, I got no goal like that, Bruce. I do 2 things. I manage power and I make money from managing power. He was proud of it. I almost threw up my soup at lunch.
The governor's reporting conversations with me never happened. The answer is I never said that. The question I would put to you, do you think I would say something like that to Bruce Rauner?
It's so sad that Governor Rauner feels that the way to address the situation of murder and white supremacy and neo-Nazis is to start by putting his finger in the wind and figuring out where the political winds are blowing.
You see, what Bruce Rauner is doing is he goes to poor white communities in central and southern Illinois, and he tells them that the reason they have trouble getting ahead or their schools aren't funded is because those people in Cook County and in Chicago get more than their fair share. And we know what he means when he says those people.
Politics getting pretty ugly in the state of Illinois, and it was on display this week. Illinois State Fair taking place. That's always a chance to rally the political troops. Democrats and Republicans each get their own day to do that. Things went a bit differently this time, and we'll discuss that. And also, is the state of Illinois any closer to getting schools the money they need to operate? All of that coming up on State Week. Here in Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford, joined in studio by Charlie Wheeler. Charlie's director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. And in our Statehouse studio, Brian Mackey, Illinois Public Radio's Statehouse reporter. And John O'Connor's our guest this week. He's a political writer for the Associated Press. And John, thanks for being on with us once again.
Glad to be here, Sean.
Brian and John, again, usually a festive time for politics and a lot of speeches, a lot of rallies taking place at the state fairgrounds. Instead, this week really seemed to devolve a bit. And in fact, there was only one rally at the fairgrounds that was overshadowed by a session day that was called in the Illinois House. So get us caught up to date on what took place this past week when it comes to some of these political discussions.
Yeah, well, as you said, there's the traditional Governor's Day rally, which goes to the party that has the governor's mansion. This year, that's Republicans. And then there's the Democratic Day rally. And the Republicans did have their rally at the fairgrounds, but the Democrats decided to concentrate things in a breakfast meeting. They just canceled the fairgrounds rally. Apparently, there was a little gathering, a much more low-key organization with some state legislators, and then one of the candidates for governor decided to hold a rally in a Springfield park here. So some sort of bubbling up of activity anyway. But yeah, the 2 big days, lots of political speeches, lots of applause, lots of we're going to send those other guys packing and that sort of talk. And things getting pretty personal, as they have been in Illinois politics for a few years now.
The interesting thing, unfortunately, the week began with this tragedy in Charlottesville, in which a man suspected of being a neo-Nazi allegedly plowed his car into a group of counter-protesters who were there to protest the rally of white supremacists and who were against the taking down of a statue of Robert E. Lee, the Confederate general. And that kind of fuels that, you know, at the Democratic Day, you had as much firepower aimed at President Trump as at Governor Rauner, because President Trump and then Governor Rauner had his own problems responding to that act of terrorism, many people called it. So that added fuel to the fire, and it's already this is heaped upon what is already a very strange period in Illinois history, that the hostility between the parties is at an all-time high in memorable history.
And as John says, the Democrats want to keep reminding voters about President Trump as much as possible, particularly in Illinois, because he lost by double digits to former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton in last year's presidential election. And so the Democrats see an advantage if their voters, are pretty fired up right now. And midterm elections tend, as next year will be, tend to go against the president's party. The Democrats point out, they say they had a record attendance for their breakfast rally here in Springfield, 1,800 people in a hotel ballroom. They went on for, almost 4 hours, John? They were more than 20 candidates for various office and other dignitaries got up to speak. It was a real act of endurance. Democrats want to talk about President Trump, and Republicans are forced to keep responding to what President Trump says. And in this case, it was his kind of comments in which he blamed both sides for the violence against the counter demonstrators who were there to protest against the white supremacist rally in Charlottesville, Virginia.
Charlie, you heard Brian and John talk about tensions between the parties being at an all-time high. There's never been really love lost between Republicans and Democrats in Illinois, but I don't remember it quite being as ugly as it seems to be getting right now. And you've got certainly more background on that. You've watched it for a longer period. Do you recall a time when it was as bad as it seems right now?
No. In a one-word answer. Now, I've been around a long time, but I wasn't here in the Civil War era, obviously, when Southern sympathizers in downstate Illinois and abolitionists in Northern Illinois were at each other's throats. But in the years that I've watched, and I started paying attention to state government, I guess, when I began at the Sun-Times and I covered the Constitutional Convention, and that was almost 50 years ago. And there was always on the floor of the chambers, there was always spirited debate. And I know as a young reporter, I was surprised after listening to one of these heated debates on the House floor, and I don't even remember what the subject was, to go out for dinner and seeing a couple of the protagonists having dinner together and chatting amiably. And I mentioned this to another guy, a Chicago Republican named Artie Telser, and I said, why is it you guys fight like cats and dogs and yet you go out to dinner? He says, hey, it's all showbiz. And there was a spirit of camaraderie. You're a Democrat, I'm a Republican, but we're in this together. We have the same vision of what we want to achieve. We just have different ideas about how do we get there. And there was a willingness to compromise. What do you really need? Here's what I really need. Can we find some way to move forward? And that's been absent. I think part of it is the atmosphere in Congress in Washington has become so toxic, it's kind of seeped down to Illinois. And you have some of that same kind of hostility. And you have people insulting each other on the floor. Back in the day, that didn't happen. You have folks who are in the legislature being insulted by aides to the governor. That didn't happen back in my day, or if it did, the legislature as a body would react to it. I remember one incident where a state representative asked a question of the Department of Transportation, and some menial person out there treated her disrespectfully. And so when the Department of Transportation budget came up for passage on the House floor, Republicans and Democrats together voted against it in protest to the disrespect shown to their member. Now, ultimately, they funded DOT, but that was in a sense of people coming together. And I don't think we have that anymore, and I think that we're the worse for it, because if you can't John.
The key there is compromise. You talked about the camaraderie. That still exists. They're still outside of the session. You're going to see Republicans and Democrats shaking hands, joking, asking about each other's families. If you look at social media, a Republican will post something about hate mail, and you'll see Democrats commenting, "Yeah, that's ridiculous." No, that still occurs, but compromise. They do not dare compromise in public, because I think you mentioned the toxicity in Congress. I think that filters down, and it's just too politically dangerous to show any sign of compromise, and that, how do you get things done without compromising?
Yeah, I would lay a lot of that at the doorstep of the governor too, in the sense that he came from an environment in which his word was law,
And he didn't have to compromise with people the same way you do when you're the head of one branch of government and you have to deal with another branch. To me, it was very telling. There was a story that came out, I think, in the local paper maybe 2 months ago now, where his education advisor said the governor agreed with 90% of the school funding reform legislation, but he's going to veto it anyway because of the other 10%. And I'm thinking to myself, man, back when I was a reporter, if you told some leader, a governor or a legislative leader, well, you're going to get 90% of what you want, that person would have been doing cartwheels with joy and been more than happy to get that.
Well, let me go back to something. The governor had an interview on Fox News, and you would think this would be a place most Republicans tend to be treated a little more better, I guess, they feel on Fox News than maybe some other news outlets. So he went on Fox News, a national interview, and was chided quite a bit for what took place there. Can Brian or John, can you recap what took place on that and what some of the criticisms were?
Yeah, this is Brett Byers' Fox show. It's an interview. I guess Brett came to Chicago for this. And as you might expect, Fox focuses a lot on national politics and President Trump. And they began by asking the governor about where he feels about President Trump's immigration stances, as well as the fact that the city of Chicago is suing the Trump administration over this question of so-called sanctuary cities, right? Chicago wants to, the federal Justice Department wants Chicago and other places to be more cooperative in the federal government's goal of trying to expel more immigrants who don't have legal status, and the city authorities are resisting that, and the federal government's threatening to withhold some money, so Chicago sued over that. And the host, Brett Beyer, pushed the governor to try and answer what he thinks about this. And as those of us who've been covering the governor in Illinois for a few years know, the governor, if he doesn't really want to talk about something, he simply pivots and says, well, you know, the immigration system is broken, and I really think we need to come together and fix the immigration system, and just kind of dodges the question, as he often does in Illinois. And he has really resisted talking about President Trump. And so the host went on to ask him about what he thinks about the efforts in the Republican-controlled Congress to repeal the Affordable Care Act, known as Obamacare. And again, Governor Rauner just said, it's a broken system. We need to fix it. We need to improve it. But really didn't stake out any specifics. And you could sort of feel the frustration. Maybe I'm speculating here, but looking at the expression on the host's face, like, why is this guy keep dodging these questions? I'm throwing him all these softballs for the red meat Fox News audience. And the governor just kind of kept dancing around these topics. The host also asked about Speaker Madigan. You know, is this longest serving House Speaker in American history, state House Speaker in American history, too powerful? What do you think of him? Why aren't you able to beat him? You had this tax increase that went over despite your veto. And the governor, relayed this story about that we heard at the top of the show and claimed he almost threw up his soup over something that the speaker allegedly said to him. And, as the speaker pointed out, do you really think I would say something like that to Bruce Rauner? And I think most people listening in Illinois thought no. So, Sean, to wrap this up, you asked about the reviews online, social media. If you did a search for Governor Rauner's name on Twitter around the time that this interview was going out across the country, you could see a lot of negative reaction. And in fact, the very popular conservative writer Ann Coulter had a tweet in which it's a derogatory term. I'll just quote what she said. She said that, I'm paraphrasing, but the governor is either a retard or is acting like a retard. Setting aside the kind of inappropriateness of that language, it did seem to be the reaction that people were just kind of scratching their heads over his responses to this interview.
Do you think it hurts him at all, though? I mean, in that sense, I mean, it's a national interview. We understand that here in Illinois, he is trying to make this him versus Madigan. And there are a lot of people out there who feel they're more conservative. They want to go more with Rauner. They agree with what he's talking about. Does something like that, is it just a media stumble that he made, or does it carry some lingering damage for him?
I think it goes directly to how this campaign is going to be framed. If for the Democrats, it's going to be go out and vote against the Trump-Rauner administrations. And for the Republican side, they want it to be Bruce Rauner versus Mike Madigan and whatever crony of his is going to run to be governor? Do you want Madigan's guy to be governor, whoever that's going to be? You know, it could be the most anti-Madigan Democrat who wins the primary next year. They're going to find a way to make him Mike Madigan's candidate because they have hit on this strategy that they think is successful. And polling does show that, Mike Madigan is about the most unpopular politician in Illinois. I haven't actually seen him compared to the president's declining popularity numbers, but I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if he was even more unpopular than the president. You do hear from people who say they're Democrats, and maybe they don't know much about state government, but they do know that Mike Madigan needs to go. It's been a very, the governor has put millions of dollars into tarnishing the name and the brand of Mike Madigan, and it seems to have been successful in penetrating the public consciousness.
Yeah, I don't think anything he said on Fox on that interview is going to hurt him with people who will or are inclined to vote Republican. Those issues don't matter to those people right now in Illinois, and he's got bigger problems facing him, you know, to run for re-election. If he had presidential aspirations, maybe that'll come back to haunt him. But, you know, it's kind of like the Checkers speech in 1952. It helped keep Richard Nixon on the ticket with Eisenhower, but it came back to haunt him in 1960. I don't think, you know, Rauner is thinking about that right now. As Brian said, he's keeping the focus, you know, on Madigan. That's how he thinks he can win.
John, you covered the Democrats as well this week, and they rallied. A lot of people were in town for that in Springfield. Was there any similar concerns about Mike Madigan among Democrats?
No, not at the rally. And it's interesting because you have two candidates, Senator Daniel Biss, who's from Evanston, and Democrat in the House from Highland, Scott Drury, who are both candidates for governor. They lack the name recognition and the money that some of the front runners do in the Democratic race for the nomination, J.B. Pritzker and Chris Kennedy. But they both have come out strongly against Mike Madigan. And that, you know, they have not been afraid to say that, yeah, Madigan, you know, has done his time and it's time for somebody else to come along. But interestingly, in front of 1,800 people who had gathered at this brunch to rally for Democrats on Thursday and are members of the Democratic Party, whose chairman is Mike Madigan, they didn't mention Mike Madigan. They talked about Biss talked about, Biss targeted his comments at the money. J.B. Pritzker and Chris Kennedy are more self-funded candidates. Bruce Rauner, we know, is sometimes a billionaire and is financing to a great degree his own campaign. And Daniel Biss has raised a lot of money on his own, but he's trailing in the money race, and he said, are we going to hold an election or hold an auction for governor? Drury talked more about, I'm an experienced leader, and I was a federal prosecutor, and you need experience, and it, you know, very very straight down the line kinds of pleas for support.
Well, Jesse White announced he was among the Democratic Party faithful there and came out and announced this week he is the Brett Favre of Illinois politics. He's going to retire. He's not going to retire. He's going to run again for a sixth term. He's 83 years old. Charlie, we know that he's been popular as far as the vote totals. We've looked at that. Does he help the Democrats there? Is it time for somebody else possibly to move up to what is a pretty high-ranking position in state government?
Well, I think he helps the Democrats in the sense that he's a proven quantity. He's someone who attracts huge pluralities when he runs. He's never really had, in his last few times out, he's not really had much of a challenge from the other side. Were he to retire, suddenly the Secretary of State's position would become a target. It would become something where the Republicans would become interested. They want to put money in it. They would want to try and win that office. They're not going to be able to beat Jesse White. And so he's, in a sense, protecting that office for Democrats. So I think it's a plus for them.
And, of course, we did have an announcement this week that a Republican is going to challenge Lisa Madigan, Erica Herold. She's an attorney from Urbana. She's a former Miss America, went to Harvard. She's tried to get into politics a bit before in congressional races, was not able to do it. Is this a signal that the Madigan name has been a bit tarnished, that somebody already is wanting to come out and take on Lisa Madigan, who a lot of people thought was a bit untouchable as well?
I think she's still untouchable, and Lisa Madigan has done a very good job of separating herself, quite frankly, notwithstanding what the Republicans and Bruce Rauner say. Lisa Madigan has become her own brand, to use a catchphrase, and she's proven herself as an administrator and a vote getter and a money raiser. And I think Erica Herold is a bright up-and-comer and is willing to, take one for the team, fall on her sword for opportunities down the road.
And I would, yeah, to that point, I was sort of stunned, maybe looking at this in a slightly different way. You know, Charlie talked about Jesse White, you know, protecting this office for Democrats because it would be a sought-after open seat. And, you know, then John said, well, Erica Herold's maybe taking one for the Republican team here by running for this. I was surprised at how few other Republican candidates there are. I verified this with party officials. We only heard from three constitutional officer candidates: Governor Rauner, Lieutenant Governor Sanguinetti, and Erica Herold, who wants to run for Attorney General. There is nobody who has made public their intention to run for Comptroller or Treasurer or Secretary of State. And particularly given that Treasurer Frerichs, Mike Frerichs, barely won. There was a long, protracted fight after that election, and as they were counting down to the vote, hundreds of votes, I think, separated the I don't remember the number.
Second closest of all time since 1900.
Okay, there you go. So, that is a seat that is potentially vulnerable. And then Susana Mendoza just won in a midterm election. I'm surprised that there aren't more Republicans. And I think, you go to these fair rallies as a reporter and you see the most hardcore supporters. Everybody is enthusiastic. And so maybe it can be taken by that and sort of think that that's the attitude going into this. I think if you look back, take a step back and look nationally, Republicans are going to be in a tough spot next year, right? They have an unpopular president who continues to make news in ways that, Republicans keep having to react to. We had Governor Rauner and Congressman Rodney Davis were in town this week, and both were very strong in their denunciation of President Trump's comments about Charlottesville, the violence there. And so it does seem, and then of course we've had a two-year budget impasse, so even though there's all this money on the Republican side, and there's certainly a desire to, lower the tax rate that just went up and maybe try and get Mike Madigan ousted as Speaker of the Illinois House. They are going into some very strong headwinds next year.
I did want to also mention that Amaya Pawar, he's a Chicago alderman. He's running as a Democrat for governor. He did announce the Caro mayor from Southern Illinois, Tyrone Coleman, will be his running mate. Did want to save some time here to talk. As we mentioned, the Illinois House was in this week after the Illinois Senate had voted to override the governor's veto on education funding. The House came in and did not do that. John, give us a quick update of what did they do and what still lies ahead.
They attempted publicly, what they said was, we'll give the governor his day in court, so to speak. The governor made an amendatory veto of the school funding bill, changed it significantly. What the Democrats in the House said was, we'll put this into a bill. We'll take his amendatory veto and we'll make it legislation and we'll vote on it. It failed, and of course the Republicans voted present. They wouldn't say yes or no on it because they were protesting that this is, you're stalling for time because you don't have enough votes for a veto override. And in fact, now the Democrats say, well, we failed. The Republicans wouldn't even support their own governor on the changes he wants, so we will attempt a veto override next week when we come in on Wednesday the 23rd.
And this seemed, John, this did seem like a game that was being played, too. You call them in on the day of the governor's rally at the fair, and you vote on this, and you say the governor had no support. You don't bring up the override. It did seem like the Democrats were playing some games, too.
That's what the Republicans were saying.
Well, another thing that they did that I think could be significant, there's also another bill which is being amended in the House, and it's a bill that's passed the Senate already. It's being amended to reflect what Senate Bill 1, the school funding, was before the Rauner mandatory veto. And the reason I say that's significant is because you hear that there are ongoing negotiations between rank-and-file lawmakers, perhaps the leaders. I believe the leaders are scheduled to meet next week, aren't they?
Actually, they're meeting Friday as we tape, potentially. Or I should say this, sometime Friday they're supposed to be meeting in a as-yet-undisclosed location.
Okay. And so if there is a compromise worked out, the fact that there's another bill sitting there that can be sent to the Senate will say, we don't want that amendment. Let's go to a conference committee. They're not used very much anymore, but they used to be used quite a bit to resolve differences between the chambers. So you go to the conference committee recommends the whatever the agreement, the negotiated settlement is. It goes to both chambers. It passes, the governor signs it, and schools will get their money.
And there's the compromise that we've all said has been missing. So we'll see what happens with that. It's time now for our notes from the field. And John O'Connor, let's go ahead and start with you.
Charlie mentioned Jesse White's prodigious pluralities that he's racked up. And I did a little analysis. And Jesse White, in three of his five victories, has won with 70%, 69%, and 66% of the vote. Those three totals are among the 15 highest winning percentages of all statewide elections since 1900. I added up all his pluralities, and on average, he's won five races for Secretary of State by 1.1 million votes. And that average plurality is in the top 15 pluralities of all time. So that's an average, and it still would rank number 15 among all statewide races, including those for president and U.S. Senate since 1900.
Charlie?
Well, we've been talking about the upcoming election, and listeners might think, but wait a second. We're more than a year away from it. But in about 2 weeks, the time frame in which petitions can be circulated for the March 20th primary of next year opens. September 5th is the day that candidates can begin circulating petitions. Filing is on November 27th. So you may think it's a long way away, but it's coming a lot quicker than you think.
And Brian.
Word this week of, at least as of when we're taping, two more Republican state legislators who say they're not going to run for re-election, Representative Steve Anderson from Geneva and Representative Sarah Wojcicki Jimenez from Springfield or Leland Grove, and both of them crossed the aisle to vote to support the compromise budget plan. Representative Anderson actually helped lead that campaign to say, you know, we've this 2 years without a budget is enough. Both are stepping down, the loss of two more votes in the legislature who were willing to compromise across the aisle.
That will do it for this week. Members of our broadcast today include Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, and John O'Connor of the Associated Press. You can get a podcast of our show. Just go to nprillinois.org and also find us on NPR One. Production assistance for the program provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.